You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
Step by step along this march, can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions and is sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved.
Many stones can form an arch, singly done, singly done. And by union, what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill, singly done, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. We'll be talking about who our underwriters are for this show later on in the program. On tonight's show, we're going to have an abridged version of the musical Pray for the Dead, a musical tale of morgues, moguls, and mutiny, in which workers in a funeral home and morgue take on the greedy one percenters who run things and come up with a unique way to save their jobs. After that, we'll have a roundup of the biggest good labor news from 2016 from Mark Grunberg in Washington, D.C. We want to thank radio station WPFW, the Pacifica affiliate in Washington, D.C., where the play was produced for radio, and also thank Bill Fletcher, who premiered it on his show. We'll start with Bill Fletcher interviewing Gene Bruskin, who wrote and produced the play. Gene did this in his retirement after a career as director of strategic campaigns for AFT, American Federation of Teachers, and then as chief organizer for the United Food and Commercial Workers' 16-year, amazingly successful organizing campaign at the world's largest hog slaughterhouse owned by Smithfield in Tar Hill, North Carolina. And now we're going to play the musical Pray for the Dead, a musical tale of morgues, moguls, and mutiny, starting with Bill Fletcher's interview.
We're delighted to have Gene Bruskin, a longtime friend, a labor organizer, and now a playwright. I mean, Gene was the mastermind behind a brilliant campaign to organize workers at Smithfield in North Carolina with the United Food and Commercial Workers, a very successful effort. He was also the director of strategic campaigns for the American Federation of Teachers, and then try to fool people by claiming that he was going to retire. Instead of retiring, he's written a play. So welcome to Arise, Gene.
Thank you, Bill. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. So why don't we just tell us briefly, like, what was this play? I mean, how did you end up writing a play?
Well, I had an interest in theater and sort of political culture in the 70s, but when I got into the labor movement in the late 70s, that sort of took all my time for really mostly almost 40 years. And then when I retired, I decided that I was going to sort of return to this fold, partly because I feel like there's a dearth of culture in the labor movement, and culture that's non-commercial and that's directed toward working class people, and I wanted to try my hand at it.
And I attended a reading of this play. I was just thrilled. I thought it was fantastic. And I frankly, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, you and I have known each other for zillions of years. I mean, but I never thought of you as a playwright. And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting there listening to this, and it's a musical.
Right. Right. You know, I grew up in my house, we had musicals playing all the time. Everything from Fiddler on the Roof to West Side Story and My Fair Lady. And so it's sort of in my blood. And when I started, I got this idea for a story. It just inevitably seemed like it needed music, because the music is, it creates a lot of life and a lot of joy, and it's a way to talk about things that you can't talk about as easily just in a word of mouth.
So give us an idea as to what's the central plot of this play.
So the play's called Pray for the Dead, a musical tale of morgues, moguls, and mutiny. And it's a musical comedy about political corruption and economic corruption, something we're very familiar with here in the United States. But it's told through the story of a group of morgue workers in a union contract campaign that leads to an unlikely uprising. So we got sort of a unique storyline in that way, but it enables us to talk about a lot of things in a fun way.
Now, rather than just you and I and Jennifer chatting about the play, we're going to do something different this morning. So why don't you tell us what we're going to do?
Well, after some discussion, Bill, I edited the play down in a way where I'm sort of giving brief narratives that introduce each a series of some of the songs in the play. And we're going to be able to, like, sort of go through the play briefly, focusing on the music, but with the storyline, so that I think by the end of the show, people will have a real flavor for what this play is about, and maybe they're going to want to come see it.
Great. So how do we start?
All right. Why don't I just start by starting the narrative, scene one. Pray for the Dead, a musical tale of morgues, moguls, and mutiny, takes place in an unknown country during a financial crisis in the early 21st century. It's the story of an unlikely national uprising inspired by a group of morgue workers. The story is recounted to the audience by a character known only as the Old Lady. She met the morgue workers while working as a cleaning woman in the morgue. Throughout the play, she's a teacher and a storyteller, and in the end, the secret identity of the Old Lady is revealed. As the play opens, we learn that union shop steward Harmon is arguing with the owner of the funeral home, Doug Graves, because Graves wants him to sign a union contract that severely cuts the wages and benefits for the morgue workers. If he doesn't sign, Graves says he'll close the 100-year-old funeral home. We meet the workers as they sing about their desperate situation, and they introduce themselves.
I work and work.
I get no rest.
I got no wealth.
I'm so depressed.
I have no hope.
I feel no pleasure.
I see no future.
I dream of treasure.
Sucking fumes for 15 years, but burying the dead still seems weird. I look at my kid, burst into tears, while my wife cleans floors for her career. But I'm still fun after a couple of beers.
Benita here. Could change, but then all of my dreams went up in flames. My husband's dead, he was badly maimed. I'm a big time loser in a rich man's game. But when I'm with my sisters, my spirit's untamed.
Harmon, I am here. I'm known as a union man. The rest of my life, it's not so grand, But in the morgue, this is my band. Today they're dealt a losing hand. But it's not my fault, it's the big boss man.
Estefan, if you will. University trained forensic mortician, lord to this place by false condition, with no respect and crushed ambition, still paying off my school tuition. But with a corpse, I'm a death magician.
Hey, it's Helene. My old man pulled me out of school. He made me earn some cash because he's so mean and cruel. Now this place is filled with ghosts and ghouls. I don't know why my friends all think it's super cool. Cause me, I specialize in breaking the rules.
Yo, Hop, that's me.
I once had dreams.
Harming, I am.
The despairing morgue workers gather at the Grateful Dead pub to figure out how to protect their jobs. In a raucous, drunken mood, they joke about the idea of killing corrupt members of the nearby parliament to generate business from big funerals and keep their funeral home open. And they sing.
We work until we drop.
While they just play and shop.
They swim in jewels and call us fools. We just don't think it's fair. A parliament of crooks, using every trick in the books to line their pockets with unearned profits, sitting on their derriere. We just don't think it's fair.
If several millionaires
just vanish in thin air,
we'll all say the Lord's Prayer.
Then
as the drunken night ends, morgue worker Johan and shop steward Harmon argue. Harmon ridicules the plan of killing corrupt members of parliament to keep the business going, but Johan loves it. We then find out that Doug Graves, the boss, is under great pressure to make the big cuts from the Vault, the secret organization of the elite one-tenth of the 1%, led by Rusty Chrome, the CEO of the giant Steelmore Corporation. Funeral homeowner Doug Graves tries to buy Harmon off by offering to make him the vice president of the funeral home in exchange for signing a sell-out contract. Harmon refuses, and the frustrated boss, Doug Graves, laments his fate. And at the end of the song, he's pushed away by the singing Vault member and CEO, Rusty Chrome.
It's not easy to be rich. I don't suggest you try it. But if you need a funeral plot, I'll gladly help you buy. I see you all sneering, think I'm a fool, rooting for workers, thinking I'm cruel, but you don't know what I had to endure. A child so lonely, only death had a lure. It's not easy to be rich, find bodies for each ditch, keep workers in their niche. It's not easy to be rich. Dad ran the business, he worshipped each death. To him, I's a burden just like his bad breath. Mom loved the business, I could never have her. To her, I offered little, she liked cadaver. Now I own the company, I relished each corpse. But I hate all the workers, they're growing like warts. I give them all jobs, pay them a small share. I smile at Christmas, but they don't care. They might turn on me. After all I've done for them, they are ungrateful. Oh, so hateful, it's becoming so dreadful. It's not easy to be rich, find bodies for each ditch, keep workers in their niche. It's not easy to be rich, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard.
Rusty Chrome enters, pushing Graves out of the way.
Get out of here, you peon. Show them how it's done. Ready, boys? It's not easy to be richest like the lords of old, to run this world around us when we'd rather count our gold. It's not easy thinking we're suspicious. It's not easy to be richest. But they can't turn on us, 'cause they need us to survive. We're in power every hour, in our lovely ivory tower. They can't turn on us. We're big and they're just midgets. We're smart and so prodigious. We're the richest of the richest of the richest of the rich.
So we return to the morgue workers as they're trying to execute their plan to kill corrupt members of their parliament to produce large funerals and save their funeral home. Despite Harmon's objections, Harmon as the shop steward, Johann proceeds with the killing plan by talking to his old friend Arkin, the maintenance man at the parliament, who's being harassed by the powerful speaker of the parliament, Joseph Laudon. Arkin delays the repair of the clogged office air vents in Speaker Laudon's office. And as a result, Laudon, a tobacco entrepreneur as well as a corrupt politician, chokes to death on a stogie in his smoke-clogged office. With Laudon's death, Graves' funeral home gets its first big funeral under the workers' plot. Johann then talks to morgue worker Benita, who grew up tough and as a young worker participated in an unsuccessful general strike. Benita at first refuses to join Johann, informing him that she's expecting a large death benefit check for her husband's accidental death on the job at the Steelmore Company, owned by Rusty Chrome. But Steelmore CEO Chrome denies her husband's death benefit, saying the accident was her husband's fault. Benita confronts CEO Chrome and Dave, and that wealthy people like him own the world and make it work. She calls him and his vault friends parasites in suits. Furious, Benita now decides to join Johann's killing plan in a song.
From the grave, he wants me to do it, to stand and be brave. He knows I'm so angry, don't like to behave. But you gotta be kidding. You think I'm a killer? No, I'm not. And I know I'm not willing to risk being shot. But if you think I'm happy with what I've got, you've gotta be kidding. You've gotta be kidding. This stuff is forbidden. Am I tough enough? You've gotta be kidding. I wanna stay hidden. I've been through enough. You think I'm a leader? Well, you may have a point. Cause there ain't nothing sweeter than busting their joint. But we keep it quiet, our souls to anoint. You gotta be kidding. You've gotta be kidding. This stuff is forbidden. Am I tough enough? You've gotta be kidding. I wanna stay hidden. I've been through enough. If you think I like watching the world go to hell, when I know I could change it just by casting a spell. But how can I trust you just because you mean well? You've gotta be kidding. I've got nowhere to go and nothing to show for playing by their rules. My heart's in such pain. The system's insane. It's all run by fools. Johan, you may have been kidding, but now I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding. Johan? Justice!
Meanwhile, a police investigator from the parliament is spying on the morgue workers and reports them to the parliament and to the vault. Benita decides to call her working women Sisters of the Spirit group together to take the lead in carrying out the killing plan. Harmon fails to convince Benita to stop her plan while she accuses him of getting ready to sell them out. She presents her bold vision, saying she thinks this plan could lead to big change, with all the corrupt elite fleeing in fear and the workers taking over. Harmon disagrees. But Harmon then finds out that Doug Graves has been keeping two sets of books and secretly stealing from the company and the workers. The first act ends as Harmon lures Graves into a meeting and slips a pair of handcuffs on him, tying him to a casket as the morgue workers take over the funeral home to run it as a co-op. But Benita is undeterred. As the second act opens, she's welcoming her spiritual coven of working women. They decide to take the lead in killing the corrupt members of parliament with a vision that this could be a moment of dramatic change for the whole country. So we return to this with the Sisters of the Spirit led by morgue worker Benita, gathering in a dark corner of town to carry out their plan to kill corrupt members of parliament, generate big funerals, keep the funeral home open, and the morgue workers having jobs. They've captured and tied up a select group of corrupt, wealthy members of parliament. They sing and dance as each corrupt member dies when their own crimes are turned against them. The corporate farmer swallows pesticides. The greedy banker chokes on his gold coins, and the nuclear entrepreneur drinks a nuclear potion. Tension is building in the country as many members of parliament, fearing death, begin going into hiding, and the government virtually shuts down. Rumors swirl that the much-feared vault is about to meet and unleash the full power of the military if they can find out who's behind the killings. Then breaking news comes. The powerful leader of the elite vault and the CEO of the giant Steelmore Corporation, Rusty Chrome, has mysteriously died, falling out of his headquarters window into a cement mixer. The Steelworkers Union at Steelmore decide to protect the Steelmore plant and their jobs by seizing it and running it themselves instead of letting it get sold off to greedy capitalists. The Steelmore workers and their morgue worker comrades sing.
We got the Steelmore blues. We got nothing left to lose. We paid all our dues. It's time to end this abuse. And we will never, 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 never give in.
We're ready to refuse. They're taken without giving.
All their donks and dues just for us to make a living. First they steal away our dignity, and now it's their intention to have us die in poverty. They steal away our pension. Got the Steelmore blues. We got nothing left to lose. We paid all our dues. It's time to end this abuse, and we will
never, 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 never,
never give in.
They tried to kill us all and stomp us in the mud.
They hate our meat of guts. They think we're all such duds. There's pain in the mill, and the people are crying. We lost fingers and toes, and now our souls are dying.
We've been burned.
We've died.
Our lungs have been fried.
We're overworked.
We've been maimed.
And then we're always blamed.
We've lost limbs.
We're diseased.
We've been brought to our knees.
We've been crushed.
We've lost our hearing.
Our health is disappearing, but you can't take our pledge. We're taking over, no, you can't take our pledge. We're taking over, no, you can't take our pledge. We're taking over now. We got the Steelmore blues. We got nothing left to lose. We paid all our dues. It's time to end this abuse. And we will never, 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 never give in.
Confrontation mounts as a general strike is called by the National Council of Workers' Organizations to support the steelworkers. Workers everywhere begin to occupy and run their workplaces. With members of parliament either dead or in hiding, the vault moguls gather for a drunken and chaotic meeting to make their plans. The vultures of the 1/10th of the 1% sing.
They want to kill us all and drink our blood. They hate our guts. They'll stomp us in the mud.
What the f*** is happening in this country?
Those people are ungrateful bastards.
It's the goddamn unions. They think we all are thieves. and that it's all our fault. They want what we have earned. They'll break into our vault.
I have ordered our military attaché, General Merciless, to lead an assault on the unions and massacre every last member.
So I say bomb them, shoot them, jail them, execute them, make them pay and pay some more. Make them pay and pay some more.
The old lady passes by with her mop and bucket and hands Rob Peoples a note.
This is most alarming. General Merciless fled this morning in his Humvee limousine filled with trunks of gold. The military has returned to the barracks to play canasta. We have been abandoned!
Miss Represent raises her hand and stands to speak.
Well, thank you, Mr. Uoff, for staying calm and cool. Now please will you be seated and stop acting like a fool? And who will do your burning and the seizing of your knives? Who is still on your side and who's running for their lives? Let me say it clearly, though I've said it all before. We're losing every battle, and we soon may lose the war.
Yes, what are we gonna do?
Well, my suggestion, I propose that...
We are under an assault, a full-scale assault. This could even be the final end of the lot. We are facing total revolt. Our affluence can come to a halt. We are under an assault, a full-scale assault. This could even be the final end of the lot. We are facing total revolt. Our affluence can come to a halt.
Plane loads of CEOs and their families flee, fearing that they are next. The old lady, the cleaning lady, who narrated much of the play, turns out to be the legendary Trudy Gardon, the hero of the historic general strike of a bygone era. As the play closes, she speaks to the audience and leads the workers in their final song.
I am so proud of Benita. I told you in the beginning that I knew a few things about a few things, but I didn't want to brag about being Trudy Gardon. But here's the point. You can only keep the people down so long. The upper crust, as they say, is just a few crumbs held together by a wad of dough. As my old cardio coach, Arnold Schwarzenegger, forget it, you get the gist, right? And these cowardly capitalists don't know that the people they step on are always waiting for our moment. We who mop the floors and fight the wars, who make the steel and cook the meals, who bury the dead and make the beds, who work the cranes and drive the trains, who nurse the sick and lay the bricks, who teach the young and shovel the dung. Sure, we get afraid. Sometimes it's even our light, our power, that frightens us the most. Still, we know it's right, and we hold on to the roots of our dignity, even when they try to cut off us all of branches of hope. And when the stars line up, when real change seems possible, fear don't stop us. We stand up. We join in. We lock arms. We march. We sing. We fight. We even risk our lives. Of course, you never know how or when it will happen. But while you're getting ready for that moment, join us. Street by street.
All the doors in the paralyzed cities with fearful men.
let's give and never asking for more. But that wasn't real living, there is so much to share, if we're willing to share, to believe in each other.
Sister and brother,
you don't need the bosses, they just get in the way. They're just albatrosses, now they've gone away. We have our own culture, our music and lore. Goodbye to the vulture.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, Gene.
Thank you, Judy. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
So we've just listened to your very unusual play called Pray for the Dead, a musical tale of morgues, moguls, and mutiny. What did it take to put on this play? Talk about the process. Once you wrote it, talk about the process of getting a cast and finding whoever was going to produce it, because it's not like this is normal theater. This is a kind of theater that we haven't seen in this country in a long time.
Right, right. No, it was, there was a huge amount of this kind of worker-oriented theater, particularly in the late 20s and 30s, that unions like Unite Here, the Ladies Garment Workers Union, put pins and needles on and ended up on Broadway.
Right.
There's a lot of shows like that. But it's pretty much, a lot of it is, most of it is gone. But I grew up on musical theater. So when I retired, I got this idea of a storyline and I wrote it down and then I made it into a short story. And eventually, once I got some help at some point from some professional theater group that sort of took me on and helped me with the script. But when I was ready to actually produce it, my whole goal all along, once I had worked on the script, and that was more than a couple of years, and the music, was can I bring this to an audience of people that never goes to the theater? And from my experience as a union organizer, it was just regular workers because theater had become sort of like opera, where it was only for some people. So I raised a bunch of money through GoFundMe online, mostly asked my friends to kick in whatever they could. And with that money, I hired a director that a union friend of mine turned me on to, his brother, who was quite good. And with him, we then just put out an ad for the cast members. And under his direction, we started doing auditions, which I had no idea how to do. And I had, in the process of working on the music, I had come across a terrific, the guy that collaborated with me and I worked, found like a musical director who just was a pleasure to work with. So I had a musical director and a director. We hired a group of cast members who could both sing and act, which is, not everybody can do both. And then we started rehearsing. But during that whole process and for months before that, I did very intensive outreach to unions to try and get them to commit to a play for their members. And it was almost like talking Greek to them. But what I did is I went to places where unions were training their members, and the members were already going to be there in training, in residence, like at the Machinist Training Center or the Amalgamated Transit Workers Training Center. And it was on the agenda. So in the end of the day, when they were done all their training, it said, play, go to play. And so they came. And that was key, because if I had asked them to get on a bus for an hour, they might not have come, because it's just not something that people are familiar with. And so the combination of the professional cast that we hired and our ability to get the union members in the room, then the only question was, did I have something that people were going to like? And to my great joy and amazement, that went over very well.
Well, then let me ask you about the reactions when you produced it for union crowds. What did people say, and were there things that, you know, they really identified with, or were there things in the play that made them uncomfortable? Because the play almost comically deals with some pretty hot issues these days.
Yeah, my thought with the play is, can I challenge people to think big about the injustices that we face? And in the labor movement, every day, or anybody who just goes to work, you're sort of confronted with lots of unfairnesses that we have to either handle or ignore. And in unions, we do grievances and so on. But the overall injustice of inequality and corporate and government corruption and all, we sort of can't handle that sometimes, and we get stuck in just accepting things that we shouldn't accept. So this was a play that where the story as it unfolds is an argument between these different morgue workers, one of whom saying, let's change the whole damn thing and let's take over. And the other one saying, I just trying, let's get us a contract to save our jobs. So every show that we had was followed by some kind of discussions. And in some cases, most of the audience actually stayed. Like, we did it for 1199 SEIU group in Baltimore that was mostly hospital workers on the lower end of the pay scale, not nurses, everybody else kind of people, and mostly African-American women. And during the play, they saw it as a union meeting, not as a theater. So rather than sit there politely and clap only at the right times, they hooted. You know, they turned it into church. You know, anytime put the people in the play put it to the boss, they were there, all right, I'm in, you know.
Every worker's so fantasy, actually, right, who's been oppressed by their boss.
That's right. That's right. They were so happy to see something where the boss got it. And when we talked afterwards, they say, that made me feel good. Like, my boss pissed me off so much, you know, it was something to see him get it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I was a little worried with them because some of the language in the play is sort of, you know, the kind of language that people spout off at work, but not everybody's comfortable with it. But in these cases, they like the language. And when we did it for the machinists, and in that case it was about 100, mostly factory workers, this one guy during the intermission came up to me and said, you know, I got to tell you, Gene, I got a little emotional. I got to tell you, because I've been working at Anheuser-Busch for 40 years, and that's the way they treat us. That's exactly how they treat us. And so I felt like with those kind of comments, you know, I got a little emotional. So that's what I hope for.
Okay, well, you know, one of the things you touched on in your comments and is right there in the play is the debate that's currently going on in the labor movement between those who want to keep to the peaceful grievance, arbitration, bargaining kind of process, which is yielding labor less and less as time goes on, and those in the labor movement who advocate much more militant tactics of direct action, civil disobedience, etc. Is this something that, like, the people who were watching the play actually picked up on? And also, what was your intention in putting it in there?
Well, I very much wanted to raise that, and it was so ironic that Bernie Sanders was running against Hillary Clinton in the meantime, and then, of course, we had Donald Trump, who was in the play. We call them members of the Vault, which was the name that the ruling elite in Boston gave their little group of bankers and insurance industry people. So I used that name. So all this was actually playing out in real life, where Bernie was talking about broader social justice goals, and Hillary was sort of talking about tweaking, you know, the everyday reality, and Trump was talking about buying the whole economy for him and his friends. So it was very relevant, and I think what people really liked was the fact that the workers won. And they took over. They seized the plant. I didn't actually deal with how the government would work in the new reality. But what I decided to do is to have the workers articulate the idea that they do all the work and that the boss generally gets in the way. And so what do we need them for anyway? And in this case, they just seized their plants and their workplaces. And so they like that notion. And I've heard that again and again from workers that, you know, the boss hires all these sort of people, young people just out of Harvard Business School to tell them how to run their operation in the workplace. And that guy knows nothing. And I've been working here 32 years. And if I listened to him, the whole place would fall apart, kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah.
So they like that level of activity. Nobody said let's do it, but they won. And I decided that winning, people getting a chance to celebrate a victory, was really important. I let them cheer and laugh, and so that's
especially,
sort of what happened.
Especially these days, right?
Especially these days,
brings me
now
to
more than ever. That was before the election,
right? And that brings me to another question, which is, you know, a lot of union activists that I know these days are pretty dismayed at the results of the election, and frankly, here in Missouri, we're preparing for the worst. This play has great faith in workers to remake the world, and I think a lot of people these days are questioning that. So just tell me, what gives you so much faith?
Well, I have, my experience has been, and, you know, I think of the Smithfield campaign, you know, where we had 5,000 slaughterhouse workers who were getting slaughtered themselves, and tried for, you know, more than a decade to try and get a union. And that's when I was hired to sort of help out. And what I found there, and what I found again and again, is that if people really find some real hope, there's something really possible that they will rise to the occasion. If there's some real leadership, if there's some real opportunities, and if they think that it's sort of just like a bunch of bullshit, or that it's not serious, then they won't. And so in the Smithfield campaign, once people really realized that the union was serious, and also they saw some of their fellow workers coming forward, and that there was some real hope, they were willing to take risks that you would never imagine. And I've seen that like a lot of times, but you really have to believe that people will do that, and you have to sort of give them the training and the encouragement and the support to play that kind of role. And I think it's possible. And I worked for Jesse Jackson once, and this Keep Hope Alive, I feel like it's got to be our slogan. And for those of us who are on staff and various kinds of leadership positions, I feel like it's on our shoulders to present those opportunities. And when they have, I think people will jump to them.
You know, I hope sometime we might be able to bring it here to Kansas City. I think it would be a lot of fun to do it. What are your plans for the play?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have various things happening. Partly, I'm still working on raising money for the next stage, and so I have a fundraising site, which is GoFundMe.org/PrayForTheDead, and that is a way to that people can contribute, because, you know, mostly I've gotten it from people, made this thing happen because people have supported me.
Well, I'll put that link on our webpage when we post the show.
Yeah.
Are you hoping to travel with the play?
What's necessary now is for theater groups around the country to want to put this thing on. If a theater group in Kansas City, for example, was interested and they saw the script, this is what students did recently in Cornell, and they wanted to put on a production, then I could work with them. So I'm hoping to get it done in local places, and I'm also hoping to mount another production here in the D.C. area. And last of all, we just yesterday set up a website, PrayForTheDeadMusical.com. Produce it.
Thank you so much, Gene Bruskin, for being on the Heartland Labor Forum. Okay, and this is Judy Ansel again. And that was Gene Breskin. The play is Pray for the Dead, a musical tale of morgues, moguls, and mutiny. And by the way, Gene told me that he wrote the play and the lyrics to the music, then hummed the tunes into his phone for a musical director to write the score. And now it's time for Washington Window on Workers. And we're going to do a little wrap-up on 2016. Now, you know, because of the elections, everybody's looking at 2016 as a really bad year. And I don't think too many of us in labor are looking at 2017 as getting much better. But we thought that we would talk about some of the good things that happened in 2016. So with us is Mark Grunberg from Press Associates, Inc., a labor news service in Washington, D.C., and he's going to tell us what the good news was. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Judy. Yes, there was some good news despite the election. And I guess the best way of putting it is when we got out in the when we in the union movement got out in the streets and fought for causes like raising the minimum wage, fight for 15, decent jobs with a decent wage and decent health care for Verizon, and decent schools, in the case of Detroit, we won. And those are three of the wins that we had this year.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was one of the ones that was actually a really big win was the defeat of the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes, that was President Obama and big business and the Republicans had been pushing this for the better part of 2 years. First, they got fast tracked through narrowly, so that they could bring this thing up without a vote, with only an up or down vote and no changes. But then, unions led the way, along with community groups, church groups, civil rights groups, women's groups, pointing out how bad this quote-unquote trade pact, and it's really much more than a trade pact, was for workers, for consumers, for people worldwide. And finally, in so many words, just as there was going to be a big rally on Capitol Hill for a final push against it, Obama and company threw in the towel, and the rally turned into a victory party. So,
right. And, of course, that did have something to do.
Yes.
That did have something to do with the election, and since both candidates were opposed to the TPP, but Trump's victory was a kind of a resounding rejection of our whole free trade policy, so that was probably the coup de grace,
right,
so to speak.
Coup de grace. Yeah, I think we should put free trade in quotes, because it's really not free trade.
No, it isn't at all.
It's not fair trade either.
No, it isn't. It was a 5,000-page giveaway to multinational corporations is what it was.
Yes.
Okay, other good news. Talk about these Detroit teachers who had a sick out and made a really important point.
The Detroit teachers were under the gun. Detroit, thanks to, amongst others, Wall Street, went broke a couple of years ago. The school board got taken over by the state, and things got very run down in the schools. In addition, this control officer whom the state appointed wanted to fire all the teachers and rehire those only who were his favorites and the Republican administration's favorites. Well, the teachers pulled the sick out, saying, look, this is what the school board, this is what the state has left in our schools. No books, bad lights. The mayor walks into the classroom and sees dead rats on the floor, things like that. And that got the state's attention, that got the legislature's attention, and the state did a fast turnaround to help the Detroit schools. So that 2-day sick out really, really won. While we're talking about teachers' wins, let's mention the one in Chicago. This time, the Chicago Teachers Union didn't have to go on strike, although they came down to literally about the last hour before the contract deadline. before Mayor Emanuel gave in and agreed to improvements in pensions, in class sizes, in staffing for things like libraries and counselors that the CTU was demanding. So that's two big wins for teachers during the year.
And it's interesting because both the Detroit Teachers Union as well as the Chicago Teachers Union have really done amazing jobs of mobilizing their memberships and educating their memberships and reaching out to the community in order to build the power they need to be able to win those kinds of victories. And they've become a model in a lot of ways, particularly for public sector workers.
Especially in reaching out to the community. Chicago could not have won without literally mass marches all over the South Side and the West Side against Emanuel's plans for the schools. So, and that had happened not only this time, but last time as well.
Okay, and then we're not going to forget the 45,000 Verizon workers who were pushed out on strike by an employer who wanted to take away their health care. What happened there?
Well, they got pushed out on strike for 45 days, and finally Verizon, which is a very profitable multi-billion-dollar corporation, threw in the towel. There were no changes on health care. There was a good raise, not a skimpy raise, and there were other benefits as well. And those 45,000 members of the communications workers and the electrical workers walked back in and are now happily employed again. Oh, and by the way, Verizon agreed to expand its call centers in the U.S. rather than exporting them to the Philippines or Thailand or Korea or wherever.
Yeah, and I noticed that Sprint just announced something like that too. We'll have to get the we'll have to get the real story on that one. Finally, I just want to throw in one more in the last 30 seconds we have, which is the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, I guess was good news for labor because it gave them at least a reprieve on the dreaded Friedrichs case, which will do to what public employee unions, what Right to Work does to unions in the private sector. And we expect Friedrichs will be back, and unfortunately Scalia may have a clone coming into the Supreme Court, but for a while at least it was some good news. That's all we have time for, Mark.
It's a breathing space. It gives public workers unions more time to organize, more time to mobilize, more time to get allies, in so many words.
Right. Okay. So thank you so much. We'll talk to you next month, and have a great new year.
Right.
Okay.
Same with you.
Bye. And I just want to say the website for the GoFundMe page for the Pray for the Dead musical is GoFundMe.org/PrayForTheDead. Their website is PrayForTheDead.com. That's it for tonight's show. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking to the carrier union official who was criticized by Donald Trump and find out the real story on carrier. And then we're also going to be talking about how labor law is stacked against American workers. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zeman.
You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.